Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
So now I'm in a car, and now I actually start crying.
Oh.
Yeah, so...
Oh, so sweet.
He's kidding.
Why?
People.
Yeah.
Had you read something to that?
So I start... Anyway, so then hours go by, and I get another message, and the message is the name. And this name was not... If you've given me 200 shots at this name, I would not have come up with this name.
Can I guess? Adolf?
No. That would not.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty, then. We're live. We're at Chatter, which is at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest, about a block and a half or so inside the line that demarks Maryland from the capital of the United States of America. Jason LaConfora is here and is going to do his own podcast, the Be More Opinionated podcast, right?
Yes, sir.
From
if you
here.
Let me.
Of course. Barry Zwerluga is here. Celebrity intern Matt Williamson is here. Nigel is running the board. We're not going to call out much. Later in the show, we'll have a surprise guest, but we're not going to call out much. The great Jack Vardaman is here. The socialite is here and has brought legions of lawyers, and they may condemn my part in this business at any point. And we have a bunch of people having breakfast, which is good. I got this letter, a wedding invitation from Joe Worth in Madison, Wisconsin, who writes, enclosed is an invitation to the wedding of me and the woman to whom I will shortly be related by marriage. I'm a millennial little who was indoctrinated into your world by my mother, who was a constant listener when you were on the team. Your purchase of Chatter also struck a chord with me because that's where my mother and father met when my dad was a bartender for Chadwick's back in the mid-'80s. The restaurant held such a special place in our hearts that we named the family dog Chadwick. Our wedding will be in South Bend, Indiana at St. Mary's College and the home of the University of Notre Dame, from which I graduated in 2013. I thought this might be a good time for you to catch up with fellow little Brian Polian, the new special teams coach for Notre Dame.
Coach.
Plenty of parking, Johnny Walker Blue. If you decide to accept, I would recommend staying at the Morris Inn, a definite two-bathrobe establishment. You guys covered... You've been to Notre Dame, right?
Yes, sir.
Do you know this hotel, the Morris Inn?
I stay in Chicago.
Yeah, oh. I'm not familiar. I do want to know.
You make the drive
for the day.
Is it possible to follow up and see if that dog is A, still alive, and B, would answer to Chatter? Well, because I think a name change is an order tone. I don't want to be presumptuous, but
you're right about that.
That's where I would go with that email.
Jackie and Joe are getting married. That's very nice. The big news in sports for the day, or the news that we will have to deal with on the PTI show, because the NBA will not let us alone at some point. Russell Westbrook wins the MVP. To me, this is a completely hollow victory. It's totally hollow. This is a sport. Basketball is a sport. There's only five people out there. If you're really, really great, you take your team beyond where the abilities of your teammates should allow you to be. Russell Westbrook's teammates are no good. And you can make the case that by even getting into the playoffs, he had a successful career. Successful year. He obviously averaged a triple-double, which had not been done since Oscar Robertson, and we are so statistically conscious that this makes all the difference. But they're out in the first round of the playoffs, and the league goes on for another month, and he will never, ever win a championship on Oklahoma City. It's not possible. To me, this is hollow. What do you
think? But don't, and correct me if I'm wrong, in baseball, the awards voting is done immediately after the regular season, and the playoffs are not a factor.
This has got to be the same, right?
This is the same.
No, this is the same.
Yeah. Right. So we know now that his team was out in the first round of the playoffs,
right.
And you probably
would have known then.
That. Yes, yeah. You could have known that then, but it's a little bit misleading to cast the entire thing based on the postseason if it's a regular season.
Well, here's what I would say, that what the postseason proved to me, and the way the postseason played out with Golden State winning, was that Kevin Durant was 100% right in running away specifically from Russell Westbrook. Because he said, I don't want to play with a guy who's got the ball in his hand all the time. I want to play where the ball is shared because I'm that kind of player. And they won. And they won in large part because of Kevin Durant.
But I could make the counter-argument, like, who should he really be sharing the ball with in Oklahoma City right now? Like, I don't know Westbrook, like, if they're going to win, right, their win-loss ratio is completely reliant on how like not just that he has a triple double, but like how many points and rebounds above beyond 10 does he get to ensure victory?
It's like it's like war.
Like if that team played in the East, they'd still probably be a four seed, and I don't think we'd be as hard on Russell Westbrook, but. Tough conference and Durant going and winning the title.
I just think when you look historically at Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant ran away from him. And at that moment, by the way, Michael Wilbon and others, Wilbon said, he'll be the MVP. I mean, it's deserving, but it's hollow.
But it also so it also proves or points out something that we've talked about here before. Not only did Kevin Durant run away from Russell Westbrook, he ran to the one group
that's right
that would share
for
that
him.
Would shared his yes, sharing him. Values like that. Yeah. That is, you know, to me, it's much more interesting and fun to watch Golden State than it is to watch Oklahoma City with the one, you know, let's clear everybody out and let's see what this one guy
and he's
one guy
great.
Can do.
He's
great.
Special.
He's
I mean, like,
great.
He's fun to watch. Like, if you have no rooting interest right. and you watch the isolation plays and let's watch him beat three people and, you
that's
know.
Right. That's right. But I don't know that in the NBA today, a team
they're not winning anything.
They can't. They can't.
So do you feel like say Russell Westbrook wins the next three MVPs,
possible.
Does not bring his team beyond the first or second round of the playoffs because he's got a bunch of schmoes. Does that mean he's not a Hall of Fame level player?
No, doesn't mean that at all. He's a Hall of Fame level player who will be judged as never having won a championship, which is a very important judgment in all sports, but particularly in basketball, where there are less moving parts, so one person can have a more dominating influence. In football, you got 22 guys out there.
Marino.
You know, and you're half of you can't play half the game, right? It's just different. In baseball, it's 1 against 9. I don't think that people judge. I think basketball is the cruelest judgmental sport.
Well, I mean, Allen Iverson is an example there. I mean, he in a way changed as much about how the game could be played and how little people saw themselves.
And he's great.
And was as entertaining and as big a character and a social, you know, kind of had an impact off the court as well. Never won a title, and that's a stain against.
Do you think it matters?
How old is he? I'm trying to think. What is he?
He's like young.
30-ish?
Nope. I don't even think he's 30.
He could chase the ring. You know what I mean? He's got plenty of time to pull a KD at some point.
He is 28.
28. So, okay,
I think
so
he's going to end up.
He's going to get a ring
in the Los Angeles
the
Lakers. As a two
when they
guard,
get built up, yeah,
and Lonzo
absolutely.
Ball will make sure he has the ball every time he needs it, and LeBron James will be on a team with Paul George.
He'll win,
and
he's
they'll beat people for a couple of years till they get too old.
Right.
The other large news: there were other awards given out that are meaningless. They're meaningless. John McEnroe and Serena Williams, which gets larger each day at this point. If you have listened to the interview, because I have, you hear John McEnroe say she is the greatest female tennis player of all time. Of all time. She's the greatest now. She's the greatest ever. And then the questioner says, well, why do you have to say female? And he goes, what? And she goes, well, why do you have to say female? Why can't she be the greatest tennis player of all time? And McEnroe says, well, because if she played on the men's tour, you know, she'd rank 700 or something like that. Now, 700, I think
that might be extreme.
I think she's going to be better than 700. But I think that we could probably agree that
she's not making any money.
At least 50 male players would dominate her, and probably a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
Serena Williams herself said a couple of years ago when somebody wanted to put her in a match with Andy Murray, who at the point was either one or two, said, he will beat me 0-0 in 5 to 10 minutes, so why are we having this conversation? So this thing bubbles up, and everybody's taking sides in it, and it seems to me so clear. Why are you even asking this question?
That's the thing.
Why are you asking this question?
It's a stupid conversation. Why? I mean,
it's like who would win a race between a cheetah and a whatever? You know what I mean? Like it's two different things. It's two different. Like it's irrelevant.
I'm not into it.
Me neither.
I mean,
that's nothing for me.
If the villain in the piece to me is not John McEnroe as much as the person questioning John McEnroe, I don't really get that.
I mean, I think maybe it would have been quelled a little bit if he had picked another number other than 700.
700
it's insulting.
Yeah. 700 is insulting and it's outrageous. But in this particular, I mean, it is possible that two things can be true. You can, in your mind, consider her the greatest tennis player of all time for the achievements that she's
had.
Of all time. Not female, not male, just the greatest tennis player of
all
time.
Which she has said over and over again.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean she can beat these guys.
Why can't it just be what it is? Like, I've come to really love women's soccer because I have a 12-year-old daughter who loves soccer.
Yeah.
Now, years ago when I was covering U.S. youth teams, I knew a guy on the team. I'm like, do you ever schedule, you know, practice against the women's team? And this was like the under-18 residency camp. And this guy was like, well, yeah, we scrimmaged them once for 45 minutes and beat them 5-1, and they stopped the match. Does that mean that the women's team isn't still the greatest women's team in the world? No, you know what I mean? It's irrelevant. It's just these are different paradigms. It doesn't matter.
I did like what McEnroe said. He said, now, if it was like a one-off match, he said, that would be different. But put her on the tour week in, week out, he said that would be much more difficult.
I mean, the most obvious thing, as long as we've been talking about basketball, if you take the WNBA champion team and put them against Golden State, and if Golden State says, let's play as hard as we can for as long as we can, they're not going to get 10 points in the game. That doesn't detract from the fact that the women's team
they're probably
is
ridiculously
great.
Good. If you put
great.
If you put the best WNBA team in the men's 64-team field of the NCAA tournament,
they
might not win a game. But what's the difference?
That's the conversation that has to stop. I mean, like, who cares? I do like the Olympics are now.
I think that's Sally's point in her piece today.
Yes.
Why are we having this conversation?
Right. It's 44 years after Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs.
Yeah.
And that was in the 70s when this was actually a real conversation, when we actually had to talk about this stuff. We don't have to talk about
this. The way to frame
it
is Title IX works. Like, go watch women's soccer now versus 20 years ago. Go watch women's hockey now versus 20 years ago. Go watch women's basketball now versus 20 years ago. Volleyball, whatever. Like, it's more competitive, not just in our country, but globally, because we've raised the bar so that other countries want to chase us. And it's been a good thing overwhelmingly. And young girls have legitimate icons who look up to at an early age.
Tens of millions of girls who never would have played sports before. You know, my only issue with Title IX is I would take football out of the mix.
Right,
the scale for the entire athletic departments that then end up having to cut, you know, men's wrestling or something because there are 85 football.
I mean, I don't think you should do that. I think you should go one in everything other than football, and I still think that the great benefit to girls going into sports would be there. But
I agree with that.
You know, anyway, so. McEnroe will be, this will be, what, 2 days more of this?
Sure.
Right?
Because there's nothing else going on. If this happened, like Super Bowl week, would we even have talked about it for 10 minutes? Probably not.
No, you're probably right. You're probably right about that. And I guess the thing that's difficult for me is that McEnroe, and the 700 is a stupid number.
That's a tough number.
But McEnroe's praise for Serena Williams over the years is clear,
and it just gets lost.
Extraordinary,
It just gets.
He becomes an arch villain in this,
right?
And that's not something that should happen. On the other hand, he likes to chat.
Well, that's the other. He's not a shrinking violet about this stuff either. What do you think now? What do you think now? What do you think now?
That'll be out there.
Well, the fact that we're talking about him in and of itself is a bit of a win for him.
He's pushing a book as well.
Yeah.
I read something at one point that. Well, okay. Let's. If you wanted to have this conversation, there are a couple of female athletes where you would say they would be competitive with men, I think. The first one that comes to mind to me is Katie Ledecky.
That's interesting.
I think her times are so great that she would...
This is quantifiable, right? I mean, there's no competing.
No,
there's no hitting a
the
serve.
The pool is the same.
And the times
it's the same.
So there were, having been around that a little bit, there were times when, like, Ryan Lochte would see her time in the 400 free and go, oh my God, that's what I swam like 3 years ago. And I do think there's a cool aspect.
She's really great.
So there's two things happened with the Olympic swimming program recently. One, they put the 1500 free in, which helps her signature event. She will win that by a minute and a half. It's so fun to watch. It's like she's playing a different sport. And secondly, they now have a mixed relays, which will it'll be, you know, a male swimmer, then a female swimmer, then which will be super. I mean, it doesn't mean that Ledecky will be any less or better, but it'll be a really fun event. I think it won't be Phelps, but imagine a Phelps Ledecky kind of relay.
Phelps got that big match against the Great White Shark coming up, doesn't
it?
That's right. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we will still talk amongst ourselves, but we'll ask Jason a whole bunch of football questions. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Boll & Branch ad. I like this. This is for sheets. This is Saliza says he buys these sheets. You don't need to spend a fortune. Well, Celissa does spend a fortune. You don't need to spend a fortune to get the rest you need. Great sleep starts with the right sheets, and they're more affordable than you think with Boll & Branch. The right sheets can take your sleep and your style to the next level. I love the concept of everything going to the next level.
That's right.
Here's the level I want to be on. I want to sleep.
Horizontal level.
That's I lay down
and wake up in the morning, right? That would be the other prerequisite.
With Boll & Branch, wake up. That upgrade has never been more affordable. Let me give you the three most important words for getting a good night's sleep. Comfortable, comfortable, comfortable. If you want the best sleep of your life, you need to be comfortable, and Boll & Branch sheets are just what you need. What makes them unique is each sheet is crafted from 100% organic cotton. That means Boll & Branch sheets not only feel incredible, but also look amazing. And since Boll & Branch sells exclusively online, you do not pay that expensive retail markup. That's half the price for twice the quality. You'll love the sheets. Try them for 30 nights. See for yourself. If you're not impressed, return them for a full refund. Come on.
Seems like a good deal.
Anyone who sleeps on Boll & Branch sheets loves them. That's why they have thousands of five-star reviews. The New York Times, Forbes, at failing New York Times said. The Wall Street Journal rave about them, and even three U.S. presidents have Boll & Branch sheets. That they don't tell you which ones. Go to BollandBranch.com today. You'll get $50 off your first set of sheets plus free shipping when you use the promo code Tony. That is $50 off plus free shipping right now at BollandBranch.com. That's B-O-L-L and B-R-A-N-C-H.com. The promo code is Tony. Once again, BollandBranch.com, promo code Tony.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is from Brandon S. Bowker, singer-songwriter, Lexington, Kentucky. This is his new album, the Treehouse EP, available now at Bandcamp and CD Baby. And this is Hold On. And he said he'd send along a disc or two for the prize closet. Which reminds me, when we have songs like this, it reminds me that in the audience today, Jerry Negrelli and Robert Berg, and the reviews on the Jingle Fest were fabulous. Everybody who went had a great time.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so it's a lovely, lovely event, and we are grateful that it exists. So I don't have any particular agenda except to talk to Jason and Barry. And I want to start with Jason. What do you do between the draft and the opening of camps? What do you do?
I'm a timer at my kids' swimming events.
Yeah.
Actually, I prefer to be, Tony, the scorekeeper, because you get to sit down when you're the scorekeeper. When you're the timer, you have to stand up for like 2 hours with the stopwatches. And then when I'm on my phone, they get mad at me and scream at me like, you must give total attention to the stopwatch. And I'm like, bro, it's like a 200 meter. We're going to be here for a while. I'm all right. They got to do three more kick turns. I got this. Like, trust me, I can multitask. No, but seriously, we go to a lot of minor league baseball games. I get like 3 to 4 weeks of vacation, so I took 1 week in June. We went up to see the Orioles get absolutely demolished. Like, we were there for like, you know, when Aaron Judge was literally hitting balls to Queens. We got to see that up close. That was fun. By the fourth inning, my kids are like, yeah, can we go back to the hotel? Like, is the indoor pool still open? Like, yeah, well, it is 15 to nothing, so yeah, let's get on the train. I took a week then. I have to like come up with three more columns this week, and then I'm off the hook for 3 weeks. So we'll go to the beach, and mostly it'll be a staycation.
We were at Hershey Park
this weekend. That was a total disaster.
That's the home of tattoos
again.
In America.
Like, they're trying to like get me to go to Disney again.
No chance.
I couldn't survive you people for 2 days in Pennsylvania.
That's right.
We're not going to Florida. Forget about it.
So we have two people here who didn't necessarily start at the Washington Post, but worked at the Washington Post when I was at the Washington Post, and Jason LaConfora and Barry's for Luga. Barry is now writing columns, which is different than covering a sport. And for CBS Sports, you cover the NFL. Barry, because I've done both of these jobs, Barry can sort of come in and leisurely decide, this is what I want to write about, and it can be different 3 different days a week. But I imagine that even when you're on vacation, you have to make phone calls. You have to keep sources alive. You have to keep lines of communication alive, right?
Well, and here's the interesting one. So we bump back the week that we usually go to the beach by a week, which I didn't think much of at the time. But now it's like literally the franchise tag deadline. So we're the 8th to the 15th instead of like the 27th to the 2nd or whatever. I'm bad at math. But so now, thankfully, they didn't keep July 15th as the deadline to extend franchise players. Because I literally would have been like, driving the Griswold family cruiser back from the Outer Banks for 8 hours with my wife like punching me in the head like, don't you get that phone? Don't you get that phone? And right. I'm like trying to text his agent and people in the organization. So they bumped that back to the 17th. But still that weekend, like, yeah, I'm busy. I mean, one year I was on vacation and that's Jason Pierre-Paul happened to be on vacation at the same time. And he blew
his hand
off.
Blew up.
Yeah. It happens. And then you just... It, you know how it is. Your instincts take over, and it's you jump out of the pool or get out of the beach or whatever, and you do what you have to do. And then you go on with your life. And at least I don't have – I know I'm not going to have to do, like, 10 hits about it on, you know, TV or our website or whatever. I'll do my phone.
I'll write my story and whatever. I look at somebody like Adam Schefter, who started at the Denver Post.
Yes.
And his life seems to me – and I know he loves his life. It seems to be hell because he's on a television – on ESPN, you are on – all the time. You almost don't have time to report things because you have to be on. Right?
I lived it. So when I was at the NFL Network, all they do is the NFL. So like Brett Favre decides it's not too hot out today and I want to start throwing the ball around to some kids in Mississippi, like get in front of your camera in the basement and you're down there until he decides he needs a water break and then you can go have a potty break. And then if he goes back out there to the cornfields and throws some more, we need you back downstairs.
Right.
Or like Peyton Manning, when he's doing his shuffle, he's going from Nashville to Denver. Remember, everybody's whining and dining him. It's like, yeah, we need you to come out to Culver City for 5 days. And then like before you go, maybe pack some extra suits. And then you get out there and it's like, you're here until he signs with the team. And I'm like, I think it's going to take 3 weeks. They're like, well, go get more underwear, son. Like, so now the
undies.
At CBS... I mean, A, it's in New York and not Culver City, which I'm all about the Acela. I don't know if I'm allowed to plug Amtrak, but I'm going out.
Right,
I love you, Amtrak. I love Amtrak.
Take
points.
It for fun.
Feel free to throw more at me. If you've ever taken the train with James Brown, it is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. He truly is the mayor of,
absolutely.
of Penn Station and Union Station. So it's much more convenient, and it's appointment viewing. Like, we have 22 editions of the NFL today, and we have a cable network that, thank God, doesn't have a show of record. It doesn't have a sports center. Because once you have a show of record, it needs to be updated constantly. And at the NFL Network,
sports center.
Tony Sparano decides, oh, I'm going to sign an extension at 2 o'clock in the morning, and we've got an earlier segment that we taped 4 hours ago that talked about the Dolphins that didn't mention it. You get called at 2 o'clock in the morning, like, you're on, and like, put a tie on, comb your hair. We're redoing this segment in 20 minutes.
Did Romo surprise you? Did that surprise you?
Yes, and
it did surprise me.
That's one that you learn in this business. Sometimes you just ole. Sometimes you just let certain bulls go running by because it doesn't really make sense for you to say everything you know because it's probably not good for your career if you do. So I knew that the wooing and the courting had been going on for quite some time. I knew that he had developed a very strong relationship with Lance Barrow, who's like a giant in the industry, our number one
producer,
producer on
golf and tennis,
and NFL.
Yeah, NFL.
You know, with Nance and Sims and all those guys. I think he used to do some of the U.S. Open when we still had it, U.S. Open tennis. So I knew it was somewhat realistic. I just thought that because there's such a need for quarterbacks that Houston would just go and say, we don't care about the money, you know? Once they did the Osweiler thing, it's like, we'll just pay you what we're supposed to pay you, and we'll add incentives if we... Remember how Peyton got the incentives? Oh, you can make more money if you go to the conference finals or go to the Super Bowl. But it got so late in the game that no one did, and I think what happened was, and I know Tony pretty well, he wasn't really feeling the love from anybody. You know, all these teams are like, well, we'll kind of wait and see, and nobody made that trade immediately. And here he's got the biggest people at CBS telling him, we think you're going to be a superstar. You could be here for 20 or 30 years.
I think
years.
He's going
to
be great.
We're willing to immediately put you into this spotlight.
And but that's the amazing part to me, is you vault into that number. He's the number one chair, right?
Yeah. He's with Nance.
I mean, that is that's a big job. And I don't, I mean, do you automatically know how to do that when you sit in that chair? I mean, went to TV.
He's a really good talker, though. He's really
very
personable.
Engaging, charming.
I think he'll be really good.
It's going to take a little time.
But that's why I thought, like, it just seems like, I mean, do you think he needed to have the number one chair to not play football anymore?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do too.
I don't think you're getting him if you're going to do Jacksonville and Buffalo for a couple of years and then we'll see where you are. Like, now I'll take the $7 million and go be a backup somewhere.
Right.
John Lynch, who's very good on TV, he's very good. He left it to be a GM.
Right.
I mean, I think it's that number one seat that is the most attractive thing. And I do think he's going to be really good right away. I do.
I can tell you, you know, he lives in Dallas. Lance lives in Dallas. I think they've been doing a lot of mock games. You know, he already has a relationship with Nance. Tony's a big golfer. He would go to tournaments. I think there's somewhat of a natural chemistry there. And I know that Tony he's down in his basement. He's watching. Like, he's not treating this as... you know, the way some guys get into the media and it's like, well, I'm going to do the bare minimum. And if I'm a good talker, they'll keep paying me.
I'll give you my theory on that. He's an undrafted free agent. Yes. And he's had to work for everything that he got. And that is what he's going to do here as well. I am surprised, though, because I thought he had one more shot in him, and I thought he had Super Bowl potential at Houston. I did. And I'm,
I agree.
Or at Denver, and I didn't understand why he left. I didn't.
And I think it was because of that number one. How often do these seats open up, and how often do they open up when I'm the hottest guy in the
room?
I mean,
there's only three of them in the world, right?
Yeah. And you know, he's with the injury history and the young kids now, and the wife and the quality of life. And I may be able to do this and enjoy all the riches that I've earned for myself by literally risking my neck every Sunday and work half a year and make comparable money.
Well, not quite. You make good money, but you're not going to make.
Well, let's
not
say, make saying, if he wanted to keep hanging on as these like 1A backup types, like if you wanted
oh,
to
no,
be
I mean as
a Josh McCown type, you're talking 6-7
years. One year of starter for him is $20 million.
Yes. Yeah, but that wasn't that right. wasn't.
Yeah,
bad.
But he's not. But he's looking at a 20, 30-year career That's now, right?
Maybe.
I mean, like the total 20. Package is
Not
bad.
One other very specific question. Colin Kaepernick, will he be signed?
When I wrote a column about this months ago, and whenever he signed, there shouldn't be any championing of this owner all of a sudden got progressive, or this guy saw the light, or boy, this team really, they were rooting for him all along, but now he proved that he really wants, it's supply and demand, it's utter desperation. He's been the best available quarterback out there for months. The NFL has collectively treated him as if he's not on that unrestricted free agent list. They've treated him as if he hasn't been available. But Romo's left the building. Cutler's left the building. I mean, you're literally talking about Charlie Whitehurst now. You know what I mean? Is some decent team that loses its starting quarterback
he's got
really
going to
sign Charlie Whitehurst?
The greatest nickname, the greatest nickname in the history of football.
Yeah, no, and he may have some of the best hair.
So great.
Some of the best hair in the history of football.
Just so great.
But like, I mean, really, you know? So it's going to take somebody getting injured and that team feeling like maybe he's not plug and play right now, but 2 weeks from now he could save our season.
So you think he will be signed?
If or when desperate measures call for it.
Okay. All right. You don't think he's being blackballed?
Oh, right? I absolutely do.
Well, what I'm asking.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're going to name me 64 better quarterbacks than him, much less 96.
Correct. It's not possible.
I mean, and some of the stuff coming out there, like that, there's this Yahoo story, like, oh, he's more concerned with being an activist than a quarterback. Like, it's just some of the things that are being thrown out there are so ridiculous. It's like when you have to go to that length to try to justify something, then something's there.
All right. Question for you.
Yes.
Tim Tebow. You've been on the Tim Tebow watch.
I know him in and out.
I was there 2 days before you. I was up at Hagerstown so that was 2 days before you.
There were like 11,000 people there.
It was nuts.
It was crazy,
I was there for the first game.
He was just promoted to high A, batting about 220.
Exactly 220.
And so, I mean, we cut to the chase in this. I believe he will be called up on September 1st.
No,
and he'll be in the majors.
I can't. Oh,
really?
Well, I will say this. The Mets are a train wreck.
That's exactly.
So they're not playing for anything this year. And Sandy Alderson, the GM, has admitted that. Was there a marketing aspect of this? Of course there was a marketing aspect of this.
About 85%.
I guess I'm going to suspend disbelief here and think, oh man, look at these numbers. Like, there's a question as to why he would even be going to high A with you know, three homers in 214 at bats, not showing a tremendous amount of power.
I would point out too, he hit two homers in the first three games.
Yes.
So he's now played about 60 games with one
and
homer.
And he's striking out at 69 times in 204, so that's whatever, it's one every three times in low A ball, where he is 7 years older than like his youngest teammate or
so
his oldest teammate.
So how can the end game not be to bring him up on September 1st?
I mean, it's making my head hurt to think that is
he should be
possible.
Released.
Yeah,
and he's
I think, but what they're doing now, I think, is, I mean, what Jason and I saw when we went to Hagerstown, right? Is oh my God, there really is an economic impact of each team in the Sally League was like, when is Tebow on our calendar? Now he's going up one more level. Each team is like, when is Tebow? And we talked about this after I came back from that. It's just you cannot, whatever you think of him as a quarterback, an athlete, a personality, a leader, you cannot deny that there are people who put faith in him, who believe in him, who look to him as some sort of symbol of something they would like to be. You can't deny that. It's an amazing
power. I think he's admirable. He's out there playing.
They look, he's sincere. Everything around him is a charade. I mean, it's a fraud. I mean, he's got a personal security guy on the field,
yes,
and a team official who holds his bats while he signs his autograph. Now, he had just come up. When they played in Hagerstown, they played the night before at home in Columbia, South Carolina. It was a 9-hour legit overnight, yes, bus ride. He's staying at the sleep-in Hagerstown with everybody else. But, you know, he also – I'm like, has he bought you guys dinner yet? And they're like, he took us to Chipotle once. I'm like, hey, Timmy, newsflash. Take them to Martin's. They're 19 and right, they have no money. Right. You know? Like, he owns a chicken chain. They're like, sometimes his chicken chain is like – our after dinner, like our after the game meal. I'm like, yeah, he could probably do a little better than that. Like, probably, you know. I'll make a prediction. When The Rock's 8-year run as president is over, Timmy Tebow will take over.
And on that note, we'll get out of here. We will come back with news. Nigel will give us the news. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent in by Dave Kogan. And as you know, if you listen to the show, you can, at the end of the show, you can get the full recorded versions of all the original music that is sent in. The song you're listening to is Falling Objects, the title track from The Influences' third album. My oldest of two masculine sons, Colin Kogan, was the drummer and the co-writer. The Influence made a little bit of noise in the aughts by putting out three albums and touring the country in a diesel bus converted to run on used cooking oil.
Wow. Ooh, I remember that.
The bus didn't run so well, but where else could you get a tour bus that smelled like the French fry basket at Chatter? I've been meaning to send his music into you for months, so when he gave me a Harry's Razors gift package for Father's Day, I knew I had to do him a solid in return. Like you, I've had the pleasure of working with both my sons. I managed Colin's band for several years. We got to work closely on a daily basis. Currently employ his younger brother, Zach, at our business in Fairfax. We're all Laura Littles, love the podcast. We're such Laura Littles, we wear me undies on the outside to elicit lecheesery shout-outs from total strangers.
That's
thank
the way
you for
veterans
playing
do it. Too.
There you go. All right, you got some news for us?
I do indeed, Mr. Tony, and I would like to start off by saying that today's newscast is brought to us by Metro's Red Line. That's right, fewer fires this year, and they are now sharing a track in downtown due to some sort of problem on another track.
Kill the Purple Line.
Oh, did you see that?
Yes, I saw a little bit of it.
Yes, apparently the judge was like, so I guess the people who want the Purple Line had to prove that, you know, they were through all the, prove their case. And the judge was like, no, you haven't proven anything.
Right.
So, no, I'm not going to rescind this ban quite yet. But so it was good. A good moment for you.
Very good moment when I saw that this morning.
Yes.
Wasn't played like I thought it should have been A1 above the fold. But
I thought
it wasn't.
We're working on personalizing the print product for you.
Almost a great win by the Washington Nationals last night.
Well, had they... Barry, you were at the game.
I was blowing up my column.
Yeah.
In a very quick 3 hours and 54 minutes.
Really enjoyed that. Yeah, Joe Madden used eight pitchers.
Eight pitches, that's right.
That's seven relievers. Yes. That takes a while.
Yes, many better than the relievers that the Nats used, Blake Schoen.
You could argue.
Matt Grace.
They scored four in the ninth, but they fall short 5-4. Just as Michael Wilbon predicted that the Cubs would romp through this series, I believe, yesterday.
Well, I mean, he's a clown in this particular regard because he said, well, we expect the Nats to sweep the Cubs. You know, that's not at all what anyone expects and not at all what he really wants in his heart. I watched for a while. I watched 1-0 into the seventh inning, I think
It was 1-0 after seven.
Yeah, I watched into the seventh, and then I turned around and saw Blake Treinen, and I said, okay, that's it. But he wasn't bad.
He forgot how many outs there were.
He didn't go on a double play.
And threw to second late, and that impacted the game. And then they started throwing the ball around a little bit. And as Dusty Baker said afterwards, you never know which run's going to beat you. They were down 1-0. It became 5-0, and the fifth run was the one that beat them. They could have, and they had Zimmerman at the plate with two outs and runners
and
on second
fine.
And third.
Last year I would have said it's a disaster, and this year I would tell you it's the you either want Murphy or Harper or Zimmerman, and you
fine.
Got Zimmerman.
You got your guy, yeah. And Murphy had a big hit earlier, and Harper had kept it alive. So even though it was 3 hours 54 minutes, it was pretty darn entertaining.
After the wild pitch that put the winning, you know, the tying run at third. You're like, oh, and Zimmerman's up. Oh, they're going to win this game now.
Well, so, you know.
Could have.
Yes.
What impact do you think that has?
I mean, they have Scherzer and Strasburg going. I mean, they you know, split the series, play well. I mean, play a little tighter than you did last night, I think. They, you know, Grace threw the ball into right field, and Brian Goodwin airmailed the plate. And Murphy tried to turn a double play and went too late to second and got a call overturned. They need to tighten it up a little bit, but they have their horses going now, so... I think it'd be interesting.
Can I ask a quick question, Horn? Was they serving old style beer out there in the bleachers? Because them Cubbies fans, Horn, they seem real at home in your stadium. I say this as someone whose team will average 8,000 people for the rest. You know, they always be lucky to average.
And then the Yankees and the Red Sox come to town.
Yeah,
and
but like, I had to. Well, the, you know, I had
the
to,
Cubs.
Had to
I was talking
in.
To the Cubs people, and they now are the kind of. They're
traveling
the Red Sox
circus,
now.
Or the
yes,
Green
they
Bay
are,
Packers. They travel.
And,
yeah,
and right. all these people who, you know, bought their Cubs gear at MLB.com 5 minutes ago and are kind of scraping it on the driveway to make it look game used and worn. They said they went to Miami. I think they were in Miami right before they came to Washington. And it was like Wrigley Field. I was surprised that the crowd was... Whoever it was made up of was only 29,000 change.
It was sparse. I was surprised at that, too, on a beautiful, beautiful
night.
So night.
Beautiful night.
What
night.
People told... Yes, you're not going to get a late June night in Washington any better than that.
That's great.
So I said something about that on Twitter, and people got back to me that the prices were jacked up for this series. And teams do this now. They do
premium
or whatever,
seating, yeah.
you know.
Was that like that thing at Uber where you're in
surge pricing?
Yes, yeah. That's what it's like. Okay. It's like you're playing to the market. The Nats may have overplayed their hand here because, to me, this should be 40,000 for four straight nights. And we'll see what it is. That Monday, maybe Monday's the soft one, but we'll see what it is the next 3 nights.
It really was a beautiful night.
Beautiful.
The obvious question about that team, you get used to seeing people once they perform for you, but Jason Worth's been out for, it seems like, months.
It's going to be a
he
while.
He fouled a ball off his foot.
He, as he would say.
Contreras did that last night and stayed in the game.
No, but he smoked himself pretty well, and he's got. I mean, I'm he.
I watched that.
Yes, well, he felt it, and yeah. he's just out of the boot now. He threw last night. I mean, you know, this is. I think it will be the first game after the All-Star break. I don't think they'll. I mean, he's 38 years old. And Goodwin has played well.
He's played well.
I think over the course of the year, you need Worth, and you need the quality of the at bats that he gives you consistently. But it's going to be a while still.
You're optimistic about him or not optimistic about
them? About him?
About, no, them.
Oh, I'm optimistic about them. I mean, we've talked about it before. Their division is
terrible.
Terrible. I do believe, even though some people in the clubhouse don't believe, I do believe that they will make a couple of moves to get, you know, some sort of back-end help. They signed Frankie Rodriguez yesterday. They're going to send him to AAA. That's not the solution. That's a lightning in a bottle type of thing if they could find it. But I think they're going to go get a David Robertson or Kelvin Herrera and see how everybody comes back healthy. And if the bullpen doesn't perform or doesn't improve, they're not a factor in October. If they figure that out, they're as good as anybody.
Is there any talk about trying to get Melanson back from the Giants?
Well, you know, Kenny Rosenthal, who is as good as it gets at what he does, he may be better at baseball than anybody is at their job in baseball, save Theo Epstein, had a story yesterday that Melanson's kind of individual routine in San Francisco has not been very well received by a veteran club that has been has underachieved. But the problem there is now... You're giving up prospects for a long contract, four years. I'm not sure that that's the route they want to go.
Can I throw a name out there?
Zach Britton.
Please.
Well, so here's
pitched
the thing.
Again at Bowie last night. Did give up a run, but I saw him pitch the other night.
That would be...
He looks like himself.
That would be the guy?
I get the politics, but
why would the Orioles... Get rid of the guy who last year was the best.
Because they got to sell.
$20 million a year.
And they
absolutely have to sell.
He's a year out. Can he be available? Zach Britton?
He should be. If they didn't have a jackass, can I say that? I guess I already did.
Well, you did.
As a general manager, then, yeah, they'd be marketing him the moment he gets done with his minor league rehab.
Okay, but the dynamic, you said you
I,
get
I know the politics.
And the politics are real here. These two teams
they will
are
not trade to let Washington get
suing,
their guy.
It makes so much sense.
They're suing each other.
Yeah,
they're suing
court.
Each other. And since the Nationals moved here in 2005, they have made trades with 28 other clubs. That's all 28 other clubs.
And not
except
the
Orioles.
Okay.
That's not a coincidence.
Okay. What else you got?
Charlie Sheen back in the news. He is selling off some memorabilia. Babe Ruth's 1927 World Series ring and an original copy of the sale document that sent Ruth from the Red Sox to the New York Yankees. Now, there's two copies of that. One was the original copy owned by Harry, and I always mispronounce his name, Frazee. Is that how you say
Frazee,
it?
Frazee.
And what Sheen owns is the Jacob Rupert one, who owned the Yankees.
So Charlie Sheen, for years and years and years, has had one of the greatest collections of sports memorabilia.
Yes.
And when ESPN opened the ESPN Sports Zone in Manhattan, the walls were decorated with all things that said donated
by
Charlie Sheen. So this is legitimate stuff. The question I would pose to both of you is, if you had the opportunity to get a Babe Ruth World Series ring or the bill of sale, which would you want?
I think I'd have to go with the hardware. I think I'd have to go with the ring.
Barry?
We talked about this. I had a little advantage to think about it because we were talking about it before you got here. I think the bill of sale, the document, because...
I think
so I thought the 27 Yankees are an iconic team, and I initially thought that. But that document changes the course of
it's
two
history.
Franchises.
It's a living, breathing...
Right, and the Boston aspect of it, as somebody who grew up a Red Sox fan, is a huge element, too. I could see going with the document.
Babe Ruth and Jackie Robinson are the two most important people in the first 100 years of baseball. There's no question about that. That bill of sale alters baseball in the way that Jackie Robinson's entry alters baseball. I would take the bill of sale rather than the ring. It affords me, though, the opportunity to talk about something. I went to Cooperstown. I've been to Cooperstown many, many times, and I commend it to everyone
out
there.
It's awesome.
It's fabulous.
So great.
You have to want to get there. It's much like Erin Hills. It's in the middle of nowhere, you have to want to get there.
The great hotel you always talk about?
The Otisaga. The Otisaga Inn with the veranda where you just get drunk as a rat. It's wonderful. But I got the opportunity. Jeff Idelson took me in there some years back, and you put on gloves, you know, because you can't touch anything without gloves. And he showed me a uniform, a Yankee uniform, the flannels, the Yankee flannels with the pinstripes and all of that, and stitched in to where the name tag would be, knowing that it's his uniform. It says George H. Ruth.
So great.
George H. Ruth. Come on.
I mean.
George H. Ruth.
I wrote a book about when baseball came back to Washington, whatever it was, 10 or 12 years ago, and they invited me to read from it at the Hall of Fame.
Oh, what an honor.
It's just like, you're kidding me.
What an
honor.
By the way, the least of the Hall of Fame is the room with the plaques.
Oh, really? That's still
pretty cool.
Oh,
though.
No, it's great, but
and it
but
blows
everything
away most
else.
Other Hall of
yes,
Fame.
Yes.
But.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, one change there, though, I would say, is I covered one induction ceremony, which was Cal Ripken and Tony Gwynn. Not a bad one to be at.
That's great.
And the night before, two nights before, they have a reception with the media, Hall of Famers, all those people in the hall with the plaques.
With the plaques.
And you're kind of like, I was like, well, Frank Robinson, that's you right there. How are you doing? And it's like, and then like Richard Gere walks up. It's just like, it was like, whoa, this is awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was when I was an intern at the Baltimore Sun, there used to be a rite of passage. Every year you had to go cover the race, the NASCAR race in the Poconos, which I had no interest in it and still have no interest in it. Just so happened that summer Earl Weaver was being inducted in the Hall of Fame. So instead I got to go watch Earl Weaver and Jim Bunning get inducted in the Hall of Fame and write about them, which was amazing. But my other story that I have up there, we have a lot of family up there. So we're up there a lot in the off-season.
In Cooperstown or in
outside
general?
Of Cooperstown.
Suburbs?
Yeah. Well, there are no suburbs.
No, there are no suburbs.
It's the middle. It's the middle. I don't want to get myself in trouble. It's a lovely
place. Route 20,
place.
Right? Right off Route 20?
These guys are in like Richfield Springs. I mean, you would not know where. Okay,
but I think
they're like 20 minutes from Cooperstown. Yeah,
when you get off the interstate, you go on 20 to get to Cooperstown.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're there like around Christmas time, dead of winter.
Oneonta's very close. A nice golf club. Golf club of Oneonta's nice.
So we always go up to the Hall of Fame, and at that point, I had Rocco is 10 now. He was, I guess, probably like 5. So we're in there. There's nobody else in there, and then like out of the corner of my eye, I see Tony Gwynn, and they're taking him with like they're taking him to show where his things go, like where they're going to put the. I get chills like right now
talking.
I love Tony Gwynn as a kid, and still do. But it was amazing because they were giving him his private tour, and there was like nobody else in there, and we were in another room, and I'm like telling him like punching Rocco like that's Tony Gwynn. And
it's
he has
three
no
blocks
idea
long.
About.
The town is three blocks long. You can go to a place called Lake Street. There's always one or two houses for sale on Lake Street, and every time you go there, you say, why don't I just buy this house right now?
Yeah.
So the answer is because you're going to be here four days. Yeah. But it's great. It's great. And I think it's the Clark family.
Yes.
Yes.
And they are the benefactors of the town, and there's a very, very beautiful hospital up there that they did. They are the Singer Sewing Machine family, I believe.
Jane Forbes Clark is the president of the Hall of Fame.
She runs that town. And they put these beautiful baskets of flowers all throughout this three-block town, hanging from all of the lampposts. I mean, it's...
There's a great brewery up there, too.
Yeah, it's wonderful, but you have to want to go there.
I've never been.
It's so worth it, dude.
Of all the things I love in your country, baseball is the top of the list. Yeah. So I've got to go at
you
some
should
point.
Go.
Is there a cricket? Is there a cricket Hall of Fame?
Yeah, but it's
is it like in India or something?
It's in a closet. Yeah, it's really not that big. Oh, by the way, just so you know the numbers on this, the bidding for the ring has topped $600,000 already. The bidding for the copy for the bill of sale is at $400,000.
I'm surprised.
And the bill of sale for the one that owned by Harry Frazee did eventually sell in 2005 for $996,000. So maybe, I mean, I don't know how the bidding will finally end up.
You sell some more Kansas City steak salads, you could probably
Here's what surprises me about that. I would have thought that something like that was every bit as valuable to collectors as fine art. And the fact that it's under $1 million surprises me.
Sure.
Not so much for the ring, but for some... You can't hang the ring.
No.
You can put this thing up in your house if you want.
But I'm looking at people, they're going to say it's still like a piece of paper. You know what I mean? Versus jewelry.
You only
like some people won't be able to get beyond that.
You only need one person to say that's worth $5 million.
It takes one.
Now, you talked about the name being stitched in the uniform. I'm looking at a picture of the ring, and on the inside it does say G.H. Ruth. It's pretty cool.
G.H. Ruth. All right, let's get out of here. We will come back with Old Guy when we return, yes?
That's right.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the SeatGeek ad, and because we talked all about sports and we talked about tickets available, I'm sure tonight for Cubs and Nats, Scherzer and Arrieta.
Good one to see.
Two Cy Young Award winners, maybe. I don't know. That's possible,
That's
the last
correct.
Two?
No, it's not possible. It's
okay,
correct.
Buying tickets. You're
going
to go.
I'm going. I'm sitting in the seats for the first time.
I have the opportunity to go with Eric Rydholm, but it's late. It's, you know, and by late, I mean it starts at 7. That's so late.
I got that message from Eric, and I knew you weren't going
to
go.
Yeah, buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps of your phone. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices, find amazing deals. To get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. But tonight, which is supposed to be another beautiful night, the last beautiful night, because then it's going up to 95 degrees.
Yeah.
This is a good night to go to SeatGeek and get tickets to the Nats and the Cubs. Best of all, listeners to this high-quality podcast get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. So if you do this, if you download the SeatGeek app and you enter the promo code Tony today, promo code Tony, $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Old Guy Radio for the Day is a pretty little-known song, I think. It's called Disney Girls. It's recorded and written by Bruce Johnson, who's 75 years old today. He joined the Beach Boys in the mid to late 1960s and has been with them in various incarnations ever since. I love this song, but nobody knows it. It was stuck in the middle of a bad album somewhere, I think. Bruce Johnson is the guy who wrote... Do you know that really big hit by Barry Manilow, I Write the Songs?
Right, that was him.
Well, he didn't write it. Bruce Johnson wrote the song. Yeah, and I don't know that he ever sang the song. This has beautiful lyrics if you're old, and I'm old. And the rest of it. When you mention Patti Page in a song, people look at it. Only the great Jack Vardaman remembers Patti Page. And, you know, so. But it's a lovely tune. All right, over the weekend, I did not get a chance to talk about this yesterday because of baby news. But over the weekend, from Wednesday after the PTI show through midday and Saturday, I was playing golf at the Golf Club of Avon. By the way, and Norby Williamson was my host, and he's also my boss, and I actually like him. And nobody likes their boss, and I like Norby, although it will not be evident from this conversation. And by the way, did you hear the shout-out yesterday to Steve Madison and Steve-O and the Golf Club of Avon? Did you hear that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I nodded off for a second there, listening to this scintillating conversation here. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. I shouted out to Mad Dog and Steve O.
Oh, they're going to love that. That's tremendous. So that means they'll only lose two of my head covers over the next couple of weeks, as opposed to all three.
Did they lose stuff of yours already?
Yeah, but I think it's by design.
I think it's possible Mr. X has stolen these things. I think that's possible.
Mr. X may have eaten one of them.
Well, that's probably
all I can tell you.
All right, so in front of your kid, because you have to tell the truth, because Matt is here, celebrity intern Matt Williamson, you didn't think you played well. I thought you played well.
No, I stink. I mean, basically, the problem is, you have to understand, I have new appreciation. Every time I spend sort of close personal contact with you beyond a 90-second phone call,
right?
I have new appreciation and admiration for, first of all, your wife, second of all, your family, and maybe a little bit Wilbon, but certainly the people you work with at PTI. I had to basically go in a dark room Saturday afternoon and decompress for about 8 hours, and even that didn't get it done.
This is what happens. No matter what happens with Norby, he will say, can I do any more? Can I do any more? Everybody wants something from me. So this is what 3 days were like with me. You didn't think you played well? I played lousy. I'm no good. I'm older.
Yeah, you're all right. You're all right. Those 6-foot putts where you got them halfway to the hole, I really admire that. again, sort of a little tasty, 6-footer, flat, straight toward the cup, where you got it 3 feet advance, was very impressive at times.
Didn't you think those two kids? So we played the format is you play 7 different matches. The group is 8. You play 7 different 9-hole matches, and the results are cumulative. And we won 2, and we lost 2. And we were pretty much even and flat all the way around, except we got beat bad by 2 kids, one claiming to be a 13 and one claiming to be a 16, who hit it, and this is not an exaggeration, 310 in the air. Am I right about that, 310 in the air?
Yeah, you always get that. Yeah, and I hit it about 160 in the air. So that's I'm getting about halfway there.
And Norby's given them shots. And okay, some of their shots are wild, but on every single hole, one of them had at least a par, right?
Yeah, well, the good thing about that, when things were going sideways and when we faced adversity, I had you by my side to actually sort of lift up and say, that's okay, things are good, not worry about it, because you're very, again, if I'm going in a foxhole, you're one of the first people that I'm taking in there with me.
So when I ask the question, how much money did we lose, what I mean is how much money did you lose, because I didn't contribute any. How much
money?
Yeah,
that was a pricey weekend.
Yeah, that's what
I mean, I'm going to have to sort of rethink that, actually. The cost and the tipping and the side bets and all that other stuff.
You said the kids on the bag were going to pool everything. I gave them a 20. Did you think that was not enough? What did you think?
That's big. I'm telling you, that when you walked out of there, I'm sure everybody looked at you and said, man, that there goes a real big celebrity. There goes a big tipper. I can't wait till he comes back at some point. Maybe he'll slide us an extra $2 every once in a while.
We got to see your second son play baseball for a little while. Got to see Brady play baseball.
He had a big game last night, actually. Another win. They're like 11-1, senior legion. He pitched 3 innings, got the win, had 2 hits. There's a little sibling controversy going on because Matt actually played in the same league and the same team.
Matt, get on the mic. Get a mic.
He professes that the league, he only is out of the league like 2 years. He professes that the league was much more difficult. He's got his little group of guys that are in college now. One plays at Sacred Heart. This kid, Cody Doyle, Mike Castellani, played at Bucknell.
Now this is helping the ratings. Yeah, Mike Castellani, and, Cody Doyle. This is helping.
So they say the league was much tougher then.
Is that true, Matt?
These guys are 11-1 right now.
Is that true?
110%.
Yeah, it was tougher when you were in there.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and your brother is never going to actually out-achieve you in this, right?
No, but, I mean, he's up there. I give him props. He's been pitching really well. So
we went to see the game, and just a couple of innings of the game, and your mom introduced me to somebody as Mr. Wilbon, which I thought happens. It's easy to mistake us, don't you think? It's easy to mistake.
No, that was my wife, actually.
Yeah, his mom.
Oh, his mom.
Matt's mom.
Your mom was there as well, too.
She had no idea who I was.
This is where you're bad on details. you tell stories like, don't let the facts get in the way of the story. That's the Kornheiser approach.
It was the Matt Williamson mom who said, this is Mr. Wilbon. So, that happens a lot to me. You would make
that
mistake.
I was actually excited when she said that, because I thought for the next 3 days I was going to end up playing the member guest with Wilbon.
All right, so that would have been great for you. Wilbon would have said, oh, I don't feel well. I'm quitting after 13 holes. We play? True. We played 87 holes in 4 days, right?
I know. It was a little sad, actually. We couldn't get those extra 13 holes. That would have been good, actually. Yeah. But obviously, you were on baby watch for a couple of those days.
Yes, and now the baby is here, so we're
happy
about that.
Congratulations on that. That's tremendous. So, although being on baby watch, the other thing is you might want to keep your phone with you.
Yeah, well, why would I do that? I just
locking the phone in the locker room for 8 hours when you're on baby watch doesn't do much good.
My first time on baby watch. So. All right, so before I let you go, let me steal the Steve Levy line. I'll get you out of here on this. Do you want to play Columbia when Ravitch comes down? He said he's doing Sunday night baseball in September. Do you you me and Ravitch play Columbia? Yes.
Yeah, that's fine. September, that's good. That's like three. Are you sure you're going to be all right in 3 months?
I think so.
Be able to hit it 140 off the tee in 3 months? That's a long time we're waiting.
I certainly hope so. I can hit it sideways 80 yards, and you would say to me, why did you do that? And I go, because I'm terrible. I'm actually
terrible. All right,
terrible.
We're good. We'll lock that in. And Matt, I've been trying to coach Matt a little bit on the podcast to not be as verbose as he's been actually down there, And we talked last night. We think the better approach would be he would like all questions to him forwarded to him 24 hours in advance in writing.
So that's great.
Better prepare to sort of add to the podcast.
That's great. We'll get that Susan Huckabee to be involved in that too, and she'll moderate.
Sarah.
Thank you, Norby. Sarah Huckabee.
All right.
Thank
good
you.
Luck.
Goodbye. So now I have more of this segment to fill, which is good. Nice job out of you, Matt. It was really good. That was really good.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. So last night I'm here and I'm having dinner with Chan. All right, and we walk out, and it's a beautiful night, so we have outdoor, for those of you who don't know, outdoor dining at Chatter. And we walk out, and I get stopped by a table of four people approximately my age, maybe a little bit older, but approximately my age, and two women and two men, and the women begin complaining right away of what's not on the menu anymore. And their focus is on the Kansas City steak salad. Okay, I have an email here, which I'll get to. Kansas City steak salad no longer on the menu. So I say, well, why was this so incredibly important? And they say, well, we've been coming here for, I don't know, 45 years or 40 years or whatever, and we really like that, and we come here every week, and it's not on the menu anymore, and from now on we're going to Clyde's.
Ouch.
And I said, I'm not going to knock Clyde's because Clyde's is really good. Right, Alan? Clyde's is really good. So we're very happy to do that. But I said, let me see if I can get it back on the menu. I said, but write me an email. Dear Tony, thanks for your interest in our menu preferences. My friend and I were great fans of the Kansas City steak salad. It was a Caesar-style salad with feta cheese and thin grilled strips of flank steak. Also missed the baked potato. Sincerely, Carol Kleinman. Okay, so it seems to me. So I said, we don't have baked potatoes. She said, no, there's no baked potatoes. Now, it does seem to me that all potato products proceed from baked potatoes. That you can get it. Right, Alan, you can get a baked potato. Can we put that back, baked potato, and the Kansas City steak salad? And I promised her that we would review all menu items and put it back. And I said the story to someone else who should be remain nameless, who said, lose them. It doesn't matter. Lose them. But I think that's what we should do.
You're taking requests now? I mean, that's a dangerous precedent to set.
Well, you walk through. You want to be accommodating to people. You're in the restaurant business. You're in the food business. You want to be accommodating. So I don't know. What do you think, Jason?
I didn't completely peruse the menu on our three-hour trek here from Baltimore. I probably should have. Is there some other derivation of a steak salad? Some close approximation of the Casey steak salad?
This is what I don't know, but it seems to me that this is not hard at all. Alan is handing me something.
Because I think a steak salad of some sort is mandatory.
Reading the Caesar salad, add
Caesar salad. There's a classic Caesar salad where you can just put steak in it, right?
No, they want the feta. They want the feta.
Oh, so what? We can add this, can't we?
Look underneath what it says.
It says show toppings and choices and add a side of. Does that say quinoa? We're not having quinoa.
Oh, quinoa's big.
Quinoa's big.
Gary,
what does it say?
Gary Williams,
get on a microphone. Get on the microphone.
Classic Caesar salad.
add chicken, steak, salmon, shrimp skewer.
So if we do that, then they that becomes the a. So just and we have feta cheese in the back somewhere.
Yes.
So
hype the feta.
I just don't understand. I mean, I don't understand. If you don't see it on the menu, what did I teach my kids? I said, if you don't see it on the menu,
say, can you make this
ask for it.
Right.
And any restaurant that has the ingredients, well, I said, if you go to the Palm, you cannot ask for Chinese food. Well, okay, but right. Anything else that seems reasonable in the fish, chicken, or meat category, you can ask for. So to Carol Kleinman and to all three others at our table, why don't you come in here and negotiate with us, and we'll be able to do this.
Tone, you can just put a sign up in this window, feta available upon request. Right.
Right? That's
just,
right.
Just put it right here.
Two signs.
Prominently
right.
Display it.
We
you're
could
good.
Do that. We could do that. Can I get to Barry for a second here?
Sure.
Right something here. Other than the Nats? The Tiger tournament is this week, and of course, Tiger will not be there. That was wholly expected, right? He doesn't want
to. Oh, I mean, he can't.
He doesn't want to answer any questions about
I
it.
I mean, he. I would think there's a very good chance he's still in rehab of
yeah,
some sort, right?
I mean,
this
so
only
too.
Happened Memorial Day weekend, and yeah. He's only made the admission that he was seeking help a couple weeks ago. There's a good chance that he shouldn't be traveling.
And you would not have expected him to be here.
No chance.
Because the first public outing he has, he will be asked nonstop about
this. I will say that he would not show up and avoid questioners. He gets a lot of grief over the course of his career for his dealings with the media. The fact of the matter is no golfer, maybe no athlete, has spoken more to the media, perhaps blandly most of the time, than Tiger Woods. He's available every tournament before he plays. He's available after every round he plays. Very few times has he stalked off and said, I can't.
If he's hurt.
If he's hurt, he does that. Or, yeah. I mean, there's one or two times when he played poorly and he didn't do it. But he knows that when he shows up in public, he is going to have to address the issues in his life.
Deb, you reach the point where you not only don't believe a single word his agent says, but you take the opposite point of view, as I do, as to every utterance by the agent?
That is, I mean, I'm tread lightly here.
Yes, because you have to cover these people.
Yes, that's an interesting take that you have. Yes,
yes.
I would say.
All right, who's in the field? Because so it's a sparse field.
So it's just amazing to me. I'm looking at the PGA Tour, you know, rankings right now. Let's rank the field. The top ranked player in this 120 person field is Patrick Reed. Patrick Reed is, you know, surged to the forefront as kind of a Ryder Cup hero.
That his match with Rory McIlroy was
great.
Memorable.
Great, very
and
memorable.
And it made him the guy. I remember describing him this way. I wouldn't want a room with him on the road, but I'd want him on my team.
I think that's how everybody feels about him out there.
Yeah.
I would describe the field this way. The fifth-ranked player on PGAtour.com in this field is Kevin Chappell. So Kevin Chappell could walk down Wisconsin Avenue and throwing $5 bills to everybody, and no one would know who he was. This event, Tiger Woods saved tournament golf in Washington, D.C. in 2007 by taking an open date and using his power, his economic power, his star power, to draw AT&T as a sponsor, to lure Congressional, the premier tournament course in the area, as a host. And now we're a decade later. This is at a terrible spot on the PGA Tour calendar. All the European players have gone overseas
to get ready for the British Open.
You can't have a truly star-studded field on the PGA Tour anymore without the Euros, or the Aussies, too. I mean, Jason Day, all those guys.
Adam Scott.
Yeah, exactly. So what you're left here with is perhaps the softest spot on the schedule when guys are done preparing for the U.S. Open and are done the week after, and they're looking for a rest spot, and you end up with a field that is wholly lackluster, one of the week. And the host doesn't play anymore. His star is diminished. We don't know whether he's ever going to play anymore. He was a draw by himself, and now he doesn't even show up to hand the trophy over. So it's rough.
Ricky Fowler is the number one star.
Ricky Fowler, as far as Q rating, is probably the number. But then Justin Thomas is number three. I mean, guy shot 63 on Saturday of the U.S. Open. He's a really good player. He's a Spieth contemporary. I think he wants to embrace or establish some sort of rivalry with Spieth. He hasn't done that yet. Jordan Spieth isn't here. Phil Mickelson's never played here.
Dustin Johnson won't be here.
Dustin Johnson's not here. So, I mean, you know, you're looking at Bill Haas and
Will this tournament dry up and go away?
Well, that's the concern. They have a a deal through 2020. It's alternating between, it's at TPC Potomac this week for the first time. Congressional has it next year. It'll toggle between the two until 2020.
And for people that don't know, they are literally across the street from one
another. They're right next literally. To each other. I mean, Davis Love III famously said once, the only problem with Avenel, which it used to be called, is that you have to drive past the Congressional to get there. So after 2020, there's a question, like, does Quicken Loans, are they getting enough out of it? Does Tiger want to sustain it? Does he have the power to sustain it? And because of its soft spot on the schedule, could it, you know, there's going to be some shifting around. The PGA Championship's going to move to May. There's some question about the future of PGA Tour golf in Washington, D.C.
And this is Washington, D.C., of course, going back to the days of Dean Beeman,
yes.
is one of the great locales in golf in the United
Tim
States
Fincham
of America.
Worked here, a former commissioner. I mean, this is it. And if you think about the kind of economics, the demographics in Montgomery County and Loudoun County, the fan
money.
You could draw, that's
money.
Money. That's
money.
Those are the people who are going to go
there's
to the
money.
Gray Goose tent or whatever.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's money.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we will take a break. We will come back with email and jingles. For those of you who are not sitting here right now, we recorded slightly out of order today, but what does it matter to you? Because you're hearing it in order. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your emails, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of you folks.
Greatest opera singer in America today,
wow.
Denise Graves.
Holy moly.
Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to my boss at ESPN, Norby Williamson, for coming on the show today and ruining my life. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, Boland Branch and SeatGeek. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Steve Oaken in Singapore, who was here yesterday.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Singapore Steve, as we like to call him.
Right.
Thanks for making our home leave one to remember this year for me and Bennett. From the time we arrived at Chatter, having you throw beer nuts at us, to the shout-out from Super G, and then taking a photo with you during the break. Great experience. Not only was the food good, a party of eight could have eaten for $100. We'll plan on being back next summer. That's that story in the Post, that people are complaining that they can't eat. Well, you know, you can come here and eat.
Right.
You don't have to go to Tail Up Goat. You don't have to. Pete Bergen, who's a bartender here, says, "Good day, boss. In addition to working for you and others at Chatter, I perform as a comedian. I've done so for about 10 years. I was recently asked to be a contributor on a show that goes on after the news on the D.C.-based Fox 5 News called The Final Five. I, along with some other comics, were asked a while back to occasionally contribute. I'm very excited to be on the show the other day, and then I was reminded of the power of this show. I've done comedy for 10 years and worked for you for about 10 minutes, but as you can see from the attached photo, the little card on my chyron reads, Chatter Bartender and Comedian. I think that's pretty cool for everyone involved, even for me and my friends, who seeing me on TV were given their own David Aldridge moment. David, I understand, at the Jingle Fest, had David Aldridge moments with everybody there.
Yes, he did.
That's wonderful. From Jeff Piggott, from Des Moines, Iowa, who... been an emailer for years and years and years. Can you please give a shout out to my DC son Nathan, who'll be attending the Cubs Nats game Tuesday night? That's tonight. The tickets are his present for his April 28th birthday. He recently said to me that speaking to you on my phone at the first night of Chad's trivia, and it was Chad's then, was the highlight of his life. Actually, may have been the highlight of my life, but who can remember? From Andy Shaner or Shoner in Madison, Wisconsin. I don't want to be presumptuous, but I feel confident that I speak for most of your listeners when I say, could we please have more discussion of what professions do or do not require shoes? Your exchange with Gary when discussing Chef David Chang's recent shoe deal and the merits of shoe endorsements for other occupations is quite simply one of the best I've ever heard you do. Lifeguard doesn't require
shoes. That's about
shoes.
It, right?
But I mean, I was amazed that a chef got a shoe deal.
Aren't they big into the Crocs? I thought those were...
Yeah, like nurses. They wear the... Chefs and nurses kind of wear the same shoes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, my daughter always wore those.
She had
Birkenstocks. Birkenstocks.
I don't know about
You need a lot of support because you're on your feet
all the time.
Lee Gordon, West Hartford, Connecticut. Last July, my small crop of tomatoes was just about ready to start harvesting. I figured I'd give them one more day to ripen on the vine. When I went out the next day to collect the first few, some varmint, two or four-legged, had made off with every single one. That is when I built the structure in the attached picture. Factoring the cost of materials and the small number of tomatoes that emerged during the remainder of the season, I estimated the amortized cost worked out to about $15 per tomato. And it's a big, it's just a, a big giant
like a silo thing that they build around them.
You know, just a box.
Yeah, it looks like a box, like a chicken coop. Netting.
Yeah.
Keep safe from the
deer. Chris Wong, a San Francisco millennial, I have a solution for your four-legged vermin problem, and the Air to Shine box won't have to spend a weekend building a chicken wire enclosure for your plants. My grandfather previously had his own issues with deer. My grandmother had recently passed away, and he would regularly bring flowers to her resting site. To his displeasure, every time he returned, the flowers would be cannibalized by the deer.
Right.
He, like you, was insufferable when this happened to him. So instead of bringing a firearm to the Oakland Hills Cemetery to ward off the deer, he devised another plan. He only needed three things: water, chili powder, and a spray bottle. Spray your plants with a hot pepper solution, and the deer will stay away from your tomatoes, like Saliza stays away from the D.C. Metro. May your tomato plant thrive. But if I spray the powder on the outside, won't that
it's like you made the sauce
taste
already?
Yeah, I don't know.
Won't
that
influence
that
the taste of the tomato?
It would have to.
That's what I would think. Selena Campos in San Diego. I write to you today in hopes you can read my letter and wish the man that I am related to by marriage happy birthday. My husband Tony has been little for years, would get a kick out of listening to the shout out while he's at work. Plus, I'd be lying if I said he has never asked me to do this, but that's neither here nor there. La Cheeserie. P.S. Hugs to Chessie. From Mark Highfield in Ashland, Virginia. Last night, my wife and I were walking through Barnes & Noble when she points to a book and she says, "Hey, isn't that the avocado guy?" It was Tim Kirchner's book. That moment made the whole marriage worth it. Please tell Tim. From Bob Dixon in Hammond, Louisiana, my father, Bob, has been a loyal little for almost 15 years. And at this point, other than moving out, I can't give him a better present than if you would wish him a happy birthday during the mailbag. It is his favorite part of the show. So happy birthday to Bob in Hammond, Louisiana. Yes. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Thank you, Mr. Tony.
I haunt the
hold on, hold on. A warm breeze and a smile you missed. Falling behind. A lifetime in a fleeting glance.
One day we will rest. We're all falling.